Welcome to Southern Maryland Perspectives. My name is Brad Gottfried, and I'm the president of the College of Southern Maryland. This is a talk show that features timely topics and guests from around the region. Today I have with me Fred Tutman, who is the Patuxent River Keeper, and we're going to explore all kinds of things, mainly what is a river keeper. We're going to talk about the health of the Patuxent and the Chesapeake Bay, and what Fred sees as the future of these very valuable resources that we have. Fred, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Brad. Good to be here.
Thank you. You've had such a varied background because you didn't come to being a river keeper as a career option. When you were little, I don't think you ever said, I'm going to be a river keeper. So could you tell the listeners a little bit about what brought you to this point? And then we're going to talk about what the heck is a river keeper.
Well, I stumbled into this work. I've always been a community activist. I live in a small rural community south of Bowie, north of Upper Marlboro. Mm-hmm. It's really my ancestral home where my great-grandfather came from. And so I grew up fishing on the river and kind of doing my own little Huck Finn thing, making little makeshift rafts on the river. So the river was kind of the center of community life for me where I grew up. And defending it locally was kind of a neighborhood hobby. Mm-hmm. And I had work that I was doing that allowed me to travel and see the world a bit. Mm. But I always kind of came back to home base because, again, that's where the ancestral ties were.
Yes.
And so I stumbled into riverkeeping work. You know, riverkeeper is a trademark title. You have to have a license to be a riverkeeper.
Okay.
There are a little over 200 riverkeepers that are licensed around the world. The group that owns the trademarks and administers the licenses is run by Bobby Kennedy Jr. He's at least the president of the organization, so the son of the former Attorney General of the United States.
So where's the headquarters? Is it in D.C.?
It's in New York City, okay. Battery March Park.
And what does one have to do to get the certification?
Well, first of all, it's a grassroots movement. So nobody in New York says, aha, we're going to create a riverkeeper program in XYZ.
Okay.
Someone has to raise their hand and say, gee, I'd like to be the riverkeeper for my local water body or this river that means something particularly to me. And by the way, not all of them are rivers. We have baykeepers and coastkeepers. These are also trademark terms.
Oh, so they're separate than riverkeeper.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And each of us are independent organizations. The only thing we have in common is that we are licensed. And that license requires that we adhere to certain what we call quality standards.
Okay.
So to rattle off a few of them, you have to be nonprofit or its equivalent, 501(c). You have to use generally accepted accounting practices. You have to have some means of patrolling your waterway. We have river keepers overseas that actually have an exemption on that particular one.
Mm-hmm.
In China, for example, I understand that some of our river keepers are not allowed by the government to patrol the river by boat because the government feels there might be something subversive going on. We cannot bring dishonor on the trademark or the title, so we have to be, you know, well-behaved people who don't get into bar fights and do unseemly stuff. I mean, these are very intuitive things, but it allows these programs each to be a one-off. Each one is doing something very appropriate to its local water body and enmeshed with the local community. Oh, we have to be grassroots. We have to be groups that are responsive to the communities that we serve.
So what does a river keeper actually do then?
So fundamentally, we are community activists whose job it is to protect water quality.
Okay.
And so what we do in many instances is we challenge polluters. If necessary, we'll take them to court in order to get the laws enforced.
Okay.
We're not cops, you know, we're private citizens and we're running private nonprofit organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So the tools available to us to do these tasks are really the same tools available to you and I, to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We use citizen activism to get the laws enforced in order to bring water quality back.
I see. And now you have, you did attend law school, so I would assume that certainly has helped you in your job.
Yeah, it certainly has. But, you know, people skills are probably just as important.
Uh-huh.
It's people that care about these rivers. It's communities that are served by these rivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lawyers, guns, and money, I don't know. I mean, the truth is, legal knowledge helps you navigate the system. It it wins you a certain level of respect from people who would beguile you, you know, with with false promises.
Mm.
And most of these water bodies have suffered from a lot of promises, a lot of government promises,
yes,
you know, a lot of commitment to do something about them, and, you know, they languish nonetheless. So citizen activism, to me, is that key component.
Okay.
particularly on the Patuxent, right? As we well know, the Patuxent has a stellar history of citizen activism that actually resulted in bringing the water quality back in the 1980s, the Bernie Fowler movement, the Tri-Counties suing, which is interesting, right? Because it's lawsuits, not rain gardens and rain barrels. I mean, certainly those things help, trash cleanups, but, it's not beer cans that is killing these waterways, right? It's stuff that you often enough cannot see.
Now, are you the Patuxent Riverkeeper, or are there other Patuxent Riverkeepers as well that work with you?
So the quality standards say that there has to be one person in each organization that's designated as the riverkeeper.
Okay.
Some of these organizations are substantial. They're large riverkeeper organizations like the James River Association and down in Virginia near Richmond.
Yeah, okay.
I think they have some 20-some people on staff.
Oh.
But it doesn't mean that other people don't play some role. I think that's one of the confusions that people get, is that you're somehow the river sheriff, or the title is somehow presumptuous. Mm-hmm. How dare you call yourself the riverkeeper? Aren't there lots of riverkeepers? Yeah, there are lots of people, but there's only one person who can be a spokesperson for the organization.
Okay.
And basically a voice for the river. The idea is that we are the eyes, ears, and voices of these rivers, and we're not governed by special interests.
Certainly. Now, do you have other people that are working with you on this?
Yeah, I actually have a small staff. We're a tiny riverkeeper operation. We're a three-person operation.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a lot in 7 counties of the Patuxent. We rally citizens. We are a watchdog organization, so we respond to calls for help from communities. We organize. We have litigated. And frankly, Brad, we try to get reparations. We actually try to not only hold the feet to the fire for the polluters, but we get them to pay back or restore what they've taken away.
Okay. Well, so the pendulum has shifted. I mean, I'm thinking like the 50s and 60s, where people really didn't care much, it seemed, about the environment. And then, in the 80s, 90s, it certainly shifted more toward protection. Do you find, and I don't want to get political, but how much is related to political parties and those that are in power in terms of the health of the rivers, especially the Patuxent?
Well, I don't think that the environment is divided by partisanship.
Mm-hmm.
I think institutional self-interest is very different from place to place. There are certainly profit-making organizations that exploit these rivers by exceeding their permits, by getting special dispensations. And so there, it's possible that political influence plays a role.
Okay.
The enforcement agencies in our state are run by politically elected people.
Yes.
Who have their own axe to grind.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never met one of them that didn't love a river or love the bay or have the best of intentions. They say about the road to where is paved with good intentions.
Yes.
But if you're trying to balance the equities, water quality always seems to be at the bottom of the list. Have you noticed economic development, keeping order? There are all kinds of reasons people give us for why they just fundamentally don't want to hold polluters' feet to the fire.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you mentioned, Bernie Fowler Sr. is very active. I mean, cares deeply about the Patuxent River. And I don't know for how many years he's been doing his wade-ins, but it seems like the river is not getting healthier. At least that's what I'm... Am I correct in that?
These rivers are failing. I believe that the regional preservation movement has largely failed. And the rebuttal argument is generally that the rivers would be worse off if they had done nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the key here, and I think Bernie would possibly agree, we have to do what is proportional, right? I mentioned rain gardens and things like that earlier, and these are all wonderful things. They're not proportional to the huge discharges of pollutants that are going into these rivers.
Mm-hmm.
We also now have this phenomenon called pollution trading, which is kind of under the radar screen for folks.
Mm-hmm.
And, for me and for Bernie and for others, these are as much moral issues as well. What's fair? What's right and wrong? I think it's wrong to impose pollution burdens on communities that don't have the resources to fight back, and to convey benefit in pollution trading, you know, you have trading marketplaces and you have people who get paid, usually elsewhere from where the pollution is, mm-hmm. to reap the benefits of these transactions. The idea is that some area gets more pollution than another area, and someone gets paid for the privilege of
doing
that.
Right, so basically, if you're a polluter, you can pay for credits so you can pollute from an entity that has credits to sell.
And that's exactly right, and this confuses people because it's a species of what people call cap and trade.
Yes.
The problem is we're not capping,
right? No.
Trading without having genuine incentives for people to reduce their pollution loads mm-hmm. are futile in many respects. I mean, I think some environmentalists would argue that you're raising money that can be invested in environmentally laudable projects.
Mm-hmm.
These are not money things, right? These are public trust resources, things you can never own.
Mm.
So in a sense, trading kind of creates a private property interest
yes.
in a public trust resource.
Mm-hmm.
It's really shocking when you really get down, when you really distill mm-hmm. what's being done here. And the only main beneficiaries are the folks who want to keep polluting and would rather pay than comply.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, when Bernie wades in, it's mainly he goes out as far as he can not see his feet or his boots. So that would suggest more along the lines of, I guess that's called turbidity, the just the clarity of the water. As a river keeper, is that your main focus, or are you looking at other kinds of things to suggest the and indicate the health of the river?
Well, we're looking at the underlying science, that is true, but we recognize that the significance of these resources is much greater than the science. People love them. People have a spiritual connection to them.
Yes.
In southern Maryland in particular, unlike, say, in the further north of the Patuxent, Montgomery County, Howard County, you know, I would give a talk to a citizens group, and someone would say, well, where's that river you're talking about? It's like, dude, it's right down through the trees. Like, don't you know? Here it's obvious. In southern Maryland,
yeah.
you can see these rivers, and
yes.
they're spiritual resources in the sense that people feel connected to them.
Mm-hmm.
They feel invigorated by being mm-hmm. close to this life force, you know, this life-giving force that runs through the communities.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking also at the impact of pollution on communities,
okay.
putting disparities on, again, people least able to fight back. EPA studies show, not just like Maryland doctrines or studies, EPA records show that poorer communities, communities of color, mm-hmm. people with less power, they get dumped on. They get
mm-hmm.
these terrible projects, these awful discharges. They also
mm-hmm.
get the health ill effects.
Mm-hmm.
And they reap none of the economic benefits mm-hmm. that we hear a lot of talk about in the Bay Movement,
yes.
which largely focuses on crabs and oysters. Have you noticed? Not on people and communities, but on crabs
yes.
and oysters.
Right.
And I believe that the living resources are one thing, but the human resources are much, frankly, have a much better story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to rally a whole lot of people to save a watershed, you have to connect with that spiritual, personal, human constant. You have to have a human story to tell.
I was reading an article about you. I didn't even know. I got it online. Protalk.com.
Prop Talk. Prop Talk?
Yes,
is that what
Prop
that is?
Talk. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure. Spin sheet Prop Talk, yeah.
And it's speaks to how you mobilize support, mainly from, I shouldn't say mainly, but especially from individuals who live near the river. And what's been your experience with this? Do you think that most people that live on or near the river, I mean, is it difficult to mobilize their support?
It tends to be difficult to mobilize support from the folks who live really close to the river, if they live in a McMansion,
mm-hmm.
they're often enough beneficiaries of economic wealth and means
mm-hmm.
that is, in some cases, the root cause of what destroys these rivers,
okay.
right?
Yes, so they're not going to be sympathetic.
Well, I think in an ideological sense, in a conceptual sense, right? They love the river, but they
mm-hmm.
also love the property value and the assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that crack me up, you know, if you drive go around like Benedict or someplace like that, you'll
yes.
see these big old McMansions right in front of the waterway, and then they got a heart-shaped pool. And I always think, wow, they're right next to the river. What's with the heart-shaped pool? It's
yeah.
all part of the living large phenomena.
Yes.
And I'm not here to pick on people of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm simply pointing out that stewardship and ownership are very different qualities. They're
yes.
not always linked. It just depends. It just depends.
I'm with Fred Tutman, who is the Patuxent Riverkeeper, and we're talking about what it is to be a riverkeeper. We're talking about the Patuxent River. So, Fred, in terms of, you mentioned when you were growing up, you know, the river was very important to you, living in Prince George's County. How much has it changed? We're both well into our middle age years. Has it changed significantly, good or bad, over those years?
Well, the river's gotten worse, I would say. I mean, we're getting report cards that reflect D minus and F, which is wholly unsatisfactory. We have fisheries that are declining. We have dead zones, both in the bay and sometimes in the Patuxent River. We have sick on contact waters, where there's an increase in this Vibrio vulnificus bug, where people swim in the waters, and if they have a cut or a compromised immune system, they can get deathly ill, even die. And again, the optimism is what we mostly hear, I think, from government reports. Optimism about these rivers is what gets people reelected. It's also what raises money for environmental groups, frankly. So optimism is not, in my view, telling the true story of the casualty of these rivers that are failing. And if the crab harvest or the oyster harvest go up in 1 year, then people say, oh my goodness, we're saved. You know, it's like the stock market. They're watching this. But if you look at the trend, and to me the trend is more telling, these rivers are going down. So the lesson we take from this, I think, is twofold. One, we know the rivers can get better because we've seen it happen before.
Okay.
So we know they're resilient. And we also know it doesn't take 40 years or three generations or anything on that scale. If you stop dumping stuff in these rivers, they have an enormous capacity to recharge themselves.
Okay.
And the things that we're doing, while they might be nice and they're good and they feel good, like, again, trash cleanups and individual stewardship, doesn't do anything at all about the wrong actors, about the folks who are willfully destroying and plundering these resources. I'm talking about coal-burning power plants and the 36 wastewater treatment plants, many of which are never within their permit parameters. These are plain sight, obvious polluters, and yet we spend a lot of time focused on educating school children and others who are not the problem.
Interesting.